wanted to visit this institute, and somehow we finally made it happen. So thanks, Marcus. And I'm really impressed so far by the institute and by everything. Really looking forward to discussing with people. So really thanks for having me. So I'd like to talk about the project that we've been working on more or less since the beginning of my postdoc, which is about bounding the purification rank of mixed state. And this is joint work with Norbert Schuch, David Perez García, and Ignacio Cirac, who is the leader of the group where I'm working. So I'd like to start talking about mixed states. As you know, they are used to describe thermal states of quantum many-body systems, which appear in a variety of areas of physics, such as condensed matter, or atomic physics, or chemistry, or high-energy physics. And they are also used to describe systems out of equilibrium, such as if you want to describe some experimental situation, or dissipative dynamics. So say if you, your initial state is pure, and then you let it evolve under some general CP map, then of course this will become generally a mixed state, or more generally, whenever you have some lack of knowledge of your system. Or that's on a more, that's somehow a mathematical analogy, they can also be seen, or they also appear as the boundary of a pure state in one more dimension if one exchanges the auxiliary indices with the physical one. So apart from the last item, all what I've been saying is that ultimately every state is mixed because pure states have zero measure. That's why it's a fundamental goal of this area of theoretical physics to come up with a good theoretical description of mixed states, where good means tractable, also relevant, and that allows us to predict lots of physics of the systems that are described with these mixed states. And a promising way to do that is to use tensor networks. So in this research line, the goal can be formulated as the will to develop an alternative description of quantum many-body systems based on an insight that I'll say in a couple of seconds. And this goal can be reformulated as saying, what you want to do is to establish neat relations between the physics of your system and the mathematical properties of the tensors. So you want to go both ways. You want to read off the physics from the mathematics, and you want to say, if I have this physics, then the mathematics will be that. And the idea is, of course, to sacrifice generality for efficiency and relevance. So you don't want to deal with a huge Hilbert space any longer, but you want to define some variational class which is efficient, meaning tractable, meaning requiring only a polynomial number of parameters in your system size. But of course, at the same time, that it's relevant, that it's, it really captures, say, states that appear in nature. And the promise that these two challenges somehow can be met together is supported by this rigorous result that was proven by Hastings a few years ago, where he showed that thermal states of local Hamiltonians at finite temperature can indeed be efficiently approximated by tensor networks. Somehow this gives solid grounds to this program. So this work is about understanding some mathematical properties of tensors, and we see that as a necessary step towards the goal of developing a good description of mixed states with tensor networks. So let me say a couple of words of what is known for tensor networks in one dimension. So in this talk, I will focus only on one-dimensional systems. This is a starting point towards higher dimensional systems, and let's say the problem that we're concerned with already appears in this simplest case. So, okay, so for pure states, we have this very famous class of matrix product states, and very successful ones, for which a lot of theoretical progress has happened in the last years. So for example, a canonical form was defined, which got rid of a certain internal symmetry that the MPS had, and fixed this symmetry in a very convenient way, from which lots of developments appeared. For example, a distinction among the injective and the non-injective case was made, and this mathematical property of the tensor was related to whether the parent Hamiltonian had a unique or a non-unique ground state. Properties such as symmetries or topological order or the classification of phases have been as well somehow studied based on this canonical form, and also a very fruitful link to completely positive maps has been drawn. And of course, all these theoretical insights have an impact into the improvement of numerical algorithms. This situation is in contrast with that of mixed states in one dimension. In this case, the variational class is called matrix product density operators. And for this, we do not even have a canonical form. So if we had one, we could study lots of things, such as maybe define a formal Hamiltonian, study symmetries, study entanglement of mixed states, improve on numerical algorithms. But we don't have one. And as a matter of fact, there's an even more fundamental question, which we do not know how to answer, which is that there exists two decompositions of matrix product density operators, which are used in different contexts. And we do not know if these two decompositions can be unified into a single one, so if they can be related. And it is the goal of this project to address this question and to investigate if they indeed can be unified into a single one or not. So the outline of my talk is as follows. I will first present the setting, so the problem that we're considering, where we ask if one can upper bound the purification rank of a mixed state as a function of its operator Schmidt rank. The purification rank is the bond dimension of the purifying state. Then I will present a counterexample, meaning that we will answer this question with a no. So it is not possible to do so. But the good news is that it is possible if the upper bound also depends on the number of eigenvalues. Finally, I will present an approximate version of the problem where we ask to provide a mixed state that is closed in one norm to your given one and whose purification rank is upper bounded by a certain maximum. And we show that this problem, this optimization problem, can be cast in the form of a semi-definite program. So that's also good news. Finally, I will conclude and present an outlook. So let's start with the setting, the problem we're looking at, where we are asking if one can upper bound the purification rank of a mixed state as a function of its operator Schmidt rank. Let's start easy. So a mixed state is described by a positive semi-definite tensor of trace one. So take your mixed state, it's an element of a Hilbert space, and express it in terms of some local basis. Now the coefficients here, you can arrange them in a tensor, all these coefficients. And I will use the diagrammatic representation of tensors, where each tensor is represented by a box, and each index by a leg attached to the box. And throughout the talk, indices that are pointing upwards, the box, stand for cats, and indices that are pointing downwards for brass. And for the moment, I will just focus on the bipartite case because this already captures the essence of our problem. Another basic fact of mixed states is that each mixed state can be seen as a subsystem of a larger pure state. That's called a purification. And I will call this larger pure state my purifying state for rho. Okay, so rho can be seen as a phrase of an ancillary system that lives on this pure state psi. So psi lives where rho lives on some ancillary system. And the diagram for this is, as you can see here, you have psi living on the system where rho lives and on some ancillaries, which are contracted. So contraction in the diagram stands for legs that start and end in a box. But now, interestingly, we're interested in a local description of this purifying state, because that's somehow at the core of this tensor network program, that you want to provide local descriptions. So you treat your purifying state as an MPS. You express it as an A tensor B, and you have to sum a certain number of times. Yeah? So that's the resulting diagram. So you have something of the form AA dagger, BB dagger. Good, so with that, I'm ready to present the problem. The problem is the following. You're given a positive semi-definite matrix rho, and you consider these two decompositions. First, the operator Schmidt decomposition, where you express rho as a sum of local operators P and Q, and you have to sum capital D number of times. Now this capital D is by definition the operator Schmidt rank overall. Now consider this other decomposition. So that of a local purification, which is what I've just defined. So you express rho as the result of a purification, and you take your purifying state and give it a local description. So something like A times or B, and you sum that, you have to sum that D prime number of times. So the resulting diagram is what I just showed you in the last slide here. And I will call D prime the purification rank of rho. Okay, so that's the bond dimension of the purifying state. And note that there exist infinitely many purifications for a given mix state, but they are all related by an isometry on the ancilla. And I'm already here choosing the purifying state whose bond dimension is minimal. Okay, and I'm fixing this isometry so that the bond dimension here is minimal. Okay, so throughout the talk, I will assume that this minimization is already done. Okay, so we have these two forms, and you might ask, why do we care? Why can't you always use, say, the left one or the right one? Well, the answer is that they offer different advantages and disadvantages. So the operator Schmidt decomposition offers the advantage that the bond dimension is minimal, in the sense that it's just the rank of this matrix when split in this vertical direction. But it offers the disadvantage that the matrices P and Q are not positive semi-definite themselves. So P sub alpha and Q sub alpha are themselves not positive semi-definite. Only their contraction is a positive semi-definite matrix, namely rho. Now, if you look at the other decomposition, it has the advantage that matrices are positive semi-definite locally because they are of the form A dagger or B B dagger. But the bond dimension of this purifying state can be much larger than the other one. Well, this is not known. So how much larger might this bond dimension have to be? This is where I'm heading to. I just want to mention that this is not only a theoretical problem, but it's also important numerically. So for example, there are now some people in our group who are running some simulations with mixed state, and they encounter precisely the problem that if they use this form, then when they need to truncate, which they always need to do locally, then they would typically discard the least relevant singular values, and then they lose positivity of the tensor as a whole, because positivity is something which is somehow spread. While if they use this form, which guarantees positive semi-definiteness locally, then they might have to take this bond dimension much larger, but they don't really know how much larger, actually. So ideally, they would like to have one form with both advantages. Okay, so let's try to relate these two forms. Okay, so let's try to go from the local purification form to the operator Schmidt decomposition. Okay, that's easy. All we need to do is to group A and A dagger and define this as my new P, and B dagger and define this as my new Q. No one forbids us to do that. So that's good, and it immediately implies that D, the operator Schmidt rank, is at most the purification rank squared. But now, if we try to go in the other direction, well, it's not clear how to do that, okay? Because the only way you know how to go from here to here is to first contract these two tensors, then open them in the vertical direction, and then express your purifying state locally. But when you do that, you lose the information of the operator Schmidt rank. So what I'm asking is it possible to go from the left to the right in a constructive way so that D prime doesn't grow too much? So is it possible to upper bound D prime as a function of D? In other words, if you have a mixed state with a small operator Schmidt rank, is there some guarantee that this will have a purification with a purifying state with small Schmidt rank? I can tell you that the answer is no. We found a counterexample, but the violation is quite mild. The good news is, as I said at the beginning, that one can indeed upper bound d prime as a function of t and the number of eigenvalues. So let's start with the counterexample. The main message here is that there does not exist an upper bound of the purification rank that depends only on the operator Schmidt rank. So we will focus on classical states, which are a particular case of quantum states. And by that, I mean states which are diagonal in the computational basis. So we have states which are diagonal. This is the computational basis. And of course, there's some joint probability distribution, Pij, which are some non-negative numbers which sum up to one. Well, you can organize this, arrange these coefficients into a matrix, which will be a non-negative matrix. Non-negative matrix means entry-wise non-negative. That's not the same as being positive semi-definite, which means Hermitian and with non-negative eigenvalues. So consider this question. In how many ways can P, this non-negative matrix, be decomposed? Well, the first and immediate answer is, OK, you can decompose it into arbitrary matrices, which is what you would obtain if you would do a singular value decomposition. And the minimal middle dimension that you would obtain here is called the rank of P. And it's defined as the minimum R, such that P can be written as a sum of R rank 1 matrices, where a rank 1 matrix is a matrix of the form column times row. OK, but roughly 20 years ago, the non-negative factorization of a non-negative matrix was defined, where you ask that P is expressed as a product of two non-negative matrices. The minimal middle dimension required to do that is called the non-negative rank, and is defined as the minimum R such that P can be written as a sum of R non-negative rank 1 matrices. Okay, so rank 1 matrices, like column times row, where all the entries are non-negative themselves. And only very recently, a third decomposition was defined, just called a positive semi-definite factorization, where R is expressed as essentially, excuse me, not R, but P is expressed as essentially the product of the trace of two positive semi-definite matrices. And the minimum middle dimension required to do that is called the positive semi-definite rank of P. So more precisely, this positive semi-definite rank is the minimum R such that there exist positive semi-definite matrices EI and FJ of size R times R such that PIJ is equal to the trace of EI FJ. Okay, so in my diagram, EI would be a dagger. Since it's positive semi-definite, each EI can be expressed as a dagger for some A. And FJ is BB dagger. And if you think about it for a minute, you will see that this is the corresponding diagram.
Sorry, can you repeat what the second case is?
Yes.
So it's you want to decompose it as vector column matrices of rank 1, where all the coefficients are positive?
Are non-negative, yes.
Are non-negative?
Zero or positive, yes.
And do we know that this is not equivalent to the first definition?
Yes. It's in general larger because it's more stringent.
Right.
And there can be an exponential separation. There are various examples.
And the third case is even worse?
No, the third case is better. It's in between the first and the second case. Because a particular case of the third case is the second case. Because a particular case of a positive semi-definite matrix is a diagonal positive semi-definite matrix where all elements in the diagonal have to be non-negative. Okay? Yeah. And therefore, this reduces to this case. Somehow, this is the less stringent. This is a bit more stringent. This is more stringent. They are ordered in this way. But interestingly, there can be arbitrary gaps among any pair. So this can be arbitrarily larger than this one, and this can be arbitrarily larger than this one. Yes?
The slide that you had, yeah. So for the first case, right? So we can consider the coefficients all positive, right? So they are the singular values of.
But the coefficients of your unitaries or orthogonal matrices won't be positive in general. So here, if you do a singular value, R would have the first orthogonal matrix times the diagonal matrix with the singular values. And S would have the last orthogonal matrix of the singular value decomposition. So in general, the entries there will be real. OK, maybe this clarifies a bit the issue. You can look at this whole picture equivalently as if P were a stochastic map. So this is by virtue of this states map duality or Choiseul-Mikulski isomorphism. This is all true up to normalization of the stochastic map, which doesn't change any rank. So you know, the decomposition of the stochastic map into arbitrary matrices would give you here simply the rank of the map into non-negative matrices would give you the minimal middle dimension needed to decompose P as a sequence of two stochastic maps. And this decomposition would give you the minimal middle dimension needed to decompose P as a sequence of two completely positive maps. So maybe that should also make clear why this is more stringent than this one, because stochastic maps are a particular case of completely positive maps. And that's the last connection that I draw concerning to this problem of the different decompositions. Interestingly, these different kinds of ranks are linked to several notions in communication complexity. In particular, the non-negative rank determines the classical communication complexity of P. This was found by Yannakakis roughly 20 years ago. And the positive semi-definite rank, this very new notion, is linked to the quantum communication complexity of P. This is shown in this very interesting paper. OK. So with that, I've been talking about classical states with these three kinds of decompositions. But of course, we're interested in quantum states, for which the rank generalizes to the operator Schmidt rank, and the positive semi-definite rank generalizes to the purification rank. And the non-negative rank does not generalize. OK, and just a comment for quantum states, you can draw the same kind of connections, where you can say the purification rank is the minimal middle dimension needed to decompose rho as a sequence of two completely positive maps. And it's also related to the quantum communication complexity of rho, as it is shown in this paper. So with that, I'm ready to present a counterexample. So this is found in the context of polytopes, more precisely in the study of the so-called extension complexity of polytopes. So consider a polytope where, as you know, this can be described as the convex hull of its vertices, say P1 to Vn. Equivalently, it can be defined as the finite intersection of the half spaces defined by the facets. Say that you have H1 to Hf. So X is some n-dimensional vector where n are the dimensions where the polytope lives, and Hj is an n-dimensional vector containing the coefficients for your x vector, and bj is a number. Okay, there's an important matrix associated to each polytope, which is called the slack matrix, which is defined as follows. So Sij is defined as bj, so the number bj here, minus hj, so remember the coefficients of facet j, evaluated at vertex I. So if vertex I belongs to facet j, then this number here is 0, because, so to say, the inequality is saturated. If vi does not belong to facet j, then it's still on the correct side somehow, the positive side of the half space. Therefore, this will give a positive number, which will be nothing but the distance from the vertex to the facet. Therefore, S is a non-negative matrix. It's a particular kind of a non-negative matrix. Not every non-negative matrix is a slack matrix. Now consider this family of polytopes. It's a very simple kind of polytope. It's a polygon, so a polytope in two dimensions. And it has a, we call it the T-gon, where T labels the number of faces, which in this case is equivalent to the number of vertices of the polytope. So if T equals 3, then the T-gon is simply a triangle. If T equals 4, the T-gon is the square. If T equals 5, it's a pentagon, and so on. Okay? And I want to consider the regular T-gons, okay? So like the equilateral triangle, the perfect square, the perfect pentagon, and so on. And each of them will have a slack matrix. Okay, now we're almost there, because the slack matrix of the regular T-gon in two dimensions satisfies that, first, the rank is constant. So the rank of the slack matrix of both the triangle, the square, the pentagon, and so on, is always 3 for any t. There's a remarkable theorem, in fact, that says that the rank of the slack matrix of any polytope is equal to the number of dimensions where the polytope lives plus 1, no matter where the polytope is. It's very easy to show that, but it's funny anyway. But what is not easy to show is that the positive semi-definite rank of this family of polytopes grows unboundedly with t. Okay, so it grows roughly with the logarithm of t. So it grows mildly, but it clearly shows that this positive semi-definite rank cannot be upper bounded by the rank, because this one remains constant and this one grows unboundedly. And this is shown in this very interesting paper. And this allows us to conclude that there does not exist an upper bound of the rank that depends only on the positive semi-definite rank. This is a conclusion for classical states, which nonetheless carries through to quantum states. That is to say, there does not exist an upper bound of the operator Schmidt rank that depends only on the purification rank, because the classical case is a particular case of our quantum case. I just want to mention very briefly that we have generalized this counterexample to a multipartite setting where we have shown that there exist states which have a small operator Schmidt rank across every cat and an unbounded purification rank across every cat. But I don't have time to go into the details. If you're interested, you can ask me later. With that, I move to the upper bounds, where we show that the purification rank is upper bounded by, first, the operator Schmidt rank times the number of eigenvalues, and second, the operator Schmidt rank to the power of the number of different eigenvalues. The first result is what I just said. You're given rho as a density matrix with n eigenvalues. Then, the purification rank of rho is at most the operator Schmidt rank of rho times n. Okay, I'd like to show the proof that goes on for a couple of slides. It's slightly technical, so if you want to go, you know, follow me, it's great. If not, just relax for a couple of minutes and then come back when I announce somehow the second upper bound. Okay, so it goes as follows. So first, consider the operator Schmidt decomposition of rho, which is by definition something like that, p tensor q, and you need as many terms as the operator Schmidt rank tells you, right, per definition. Second, consider the eigenvalue decomposition of rho, which is something of this form, where lambda i's are non-negative because it's a positive semi-definite tensor, which has this diagrammatic representation like phi phi dagger, where I have absorbed the square root of the lambda i's into the phi's. Okay? And the strength of this middle index is precisely the number of eigenvalues. Okay, now I want you to note that this eigenvalue decomposition already provides a purification. So that's always the case. So the purification rank of rho is always, at most, the rank of the eigenvectors. So if only we could bound the bond dimension of these eigenvectors somehow using this operator Schmidt rank, we would be done. So there's a way to do that, which goes as follows. The idea is to project rho onto a product state, mu sub gamma tensor mu sub gamma, and we call this projection chi gamma. Okay, gamma is the index that is carried by this product state. Okay, now what's gamma? Sorry, what's chi? Okay, we can use the first form of rho, substitute it in here, and get that chi gamma is equal to pq contracted with mu and nu. I haven't done anything, but the interesting thing of that is that it allows me to conclude that the rank of chi gamma is at most d, because I have contracted it with the product state, so this cannot increase the rank. At most, it can decrease it. I mean, in the best case, it can decrease it. On the other hand, we can use the eigenvalue decomposition of rho here, substitute it in here, and again say that chi is equal to this eigenvalue decomposition contracted with a product state mu nu. Now, I call this contraction here C. It's a coefficient that is multiplying my eigenvector phi. Now, if you look carefully, what we have achieved here is that we have expressed chi gamma as a linear combination of the eigenvectors phi I with coefficients C. And remember that our goal was to upper bound the bond dimension of phi. So if only we could invert this relation and express phi as a function of chi instead of the other way around, as we have it now, we would be done. And this can indeed be done. So there always exists some product vectors, mu sub gamma, nu sub gamma, such that the chi gammas are linearly independent, so they form a basis. Okay? It's not so much work to show it, but you need to think a bit. But believe me for the moment that this is the case. And this implies that C is non-singular, and therefore it can be inverted. And I will call the inverse D. So, and what happens is that if I apply this inverse on phi C, then C and D cancel by definition because they are inverse of each other. So I get phi. And on the other hand, phi C was equal to chi. So that's equal to chi D. So I have managed to express phi I as a linear combination of chi's. Now, the rank of each chi was at most D. And I have at most little n terms in this little in this linear combination. Therefore, I can conclude that the rank of phi I is at most D times n, and that the purification rank of rho is at most D times n. This concludes the proof. And I want to move to the second upper bound, which is a bit different. So here we have the following result. We say rho denotes a density matrix with n eigenvalues, and you have n tilde different eigenvalues. Then the purification rank of rho is at most the operator Schmidt rank of rho to the power of n tilde minus 1. Okay, so before we had the product here with n. So now we have a power, but in general it's much worse. But the advantage of this bound is that it depends only on the number of different eigenvalues. So it could be advantageous in some cases. And it's, again, I'd like to show the proof because I think it's quite funny, it's quite interesting, and I'll give some more insight into this proof in the last part of the talk. So it goes as follows. So you consider a purifying state, capital Psi, which is constructed as the sum of powers of rho. So you start like rho to the 0 plus rho to the 1 plus rho to the 2 plus blah, 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 plus rho to the n tilde minus 1. And each power is attached to an ancillary state, like a0, a1, a to the n tilde minus 1. Okay? And these ancillary states are in general not orthogonal to each other. And you define rho prime as the state that results from considering Psi as the purifying state for rho prime. Now, by construction, the purification rank of rho prime is at most the rank of Psi, because Psi is a purifying state of rho prime. And you can see that the rank of Psi is at most the operator Schmidt rank of rho, which I call capital D, to the power of n tilde minus 1. Why is that? Because you can look at psi, if you want, as an MPS, which is constructed as the sum of n tilde terms. And each such term has a certain bond dimension. Now, you can stack somehow all these terms together and construct somehow a single MPS whose bond dimension can be seen to be at most d to the power or of the order of d to the power of n tilde minus 1. OK, so let's have a closer look at rho prime. What happens if you take that purifying state? Well, it turns out that rho prime has the same eigenvectors as rho. You just have to work out the algebra. But the eigenvalues are a polynomial of those of rho. So rho prime is something of this form, sum over polynomial of eigenvalues of a polynomial of the eigenvalue lambda I multiplied by the projector onto the eigenspace of lambda I. And this polynomial has degree 2 times n tilde minus 1. It's a polynomial, of course, with the variable lambda I here and some coefficients c. Now, finally, this is not an arbitrary polynomial, but it's a polynomial whose coefficients are the sums of the antidiagonals of a positive semi-definite matrix. So consider this positive semi-definite matrix R, and you look at the antidiagonals. You look at the first one, which is simply this entry, and this defines your first coefficient, C0. You sum these two other entries, and this defines the second coefficient, C1. You sum these three entries, this defines the third coefficient, C2, and so on. And this positive semi-definite matrix is nothing but the Gram matrix of the ancillary states. So Rij is defined as the overlap between Ai and Aj. Okay, just what comes up if you do the algebra. Okay, now I'm almost done, because the polynomial that we just saw can be written as somehow an expected value of R with these vectors, which I call Vi. And the vector Vi is very simple. It just contains lambda I to the 0, lambda I to the 1, blah, 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 until lambda I to the n tilde minus 1. Now, by construction, the vectors Vi are linearly independent, because all the lambda I's are taken to be different. So from the beginning, I've only considered different eigenvalues. Therefore, there exists a biorthogonal basis, omega I's, such that, by definition of biorthogonal basis, the overlap among Vi and omega j is only delta ij. So you only need to choose R as a sum of projectors onto these biorthogonal spaces times the eigenvalue corresponding to that space. So if you plug this in here, you will immediately see that when the Vi meets the omega j, you will obtain a delta ij, and therefore this sum will be equal to lambda I. That is to say, V of lambda I will be equal to lambda I, and therefore rho prime will be equal to rho, and we have shown that the purification rank of rho is equal to the purification rank of rho prime, which is at most of the order of the operator Schmidt rank of rho, which is called capital D, to the power of n tilde minus 1. This concludes the proof of the second bound. And with that, I'd like to move to the last part of the talk, where we consider the problem of obtaining approximate solutions. And we show that finding the closest density matrix to your given one, but which nonetheless has a maximum purification rank, can be cast in the form of a semi-definite program. So to understand this approximation problem, it's useful to first consider the exact solution that we just obtained in this constructive proof of upper bound 2, what I've just been talking about. So in this case, consider this plot. We have here the eigenvalues of rho, and this is just the real axis, say this is 0, and somewhere up there is this the 1. And you just, you know, mark the values of the eigenvalues of rho. say lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, so somehow in decreasing order. Okay? And you know that the eigenvalues of rho prime are given by a polynomial evaluated at the points lambda I. Okay, so there will be some polynomial here, and when you evaluate it at these points, the result of this evaluation will give you the eigenvalue of rho prime. And you know that you obtain the exact solution, so somehow the approximation is perfect, if this polynomial of lambda I is equal to lambda I. That is to say, if the polynomial passes through these points. Okay, so that somehow each lambda is reflected into this 45-degree line. Okay. So what we showed in a couple of slides ago is that there always exists a polynomial of degree 2 times n tilde minus 1 that passes through n tilde points. Okay, you know, usually, the statement according to this fundamental theory of algebra is that there always exists a polynomial of degree n tilde that passes through n tilde points. But of course, here we have an extra condition on this polynomial, which is that its coefficients are the sums of the antidiagonals of a positive semi-definite matrix. And in my rough understanding is that this extra condition effectively somehow decreases the degree of the polynomial, but I can't prove that rigorously. Okay? But I'm just giving you the intuition of what I understand so far. And from here, it's also obvious why only different eigenvalues matter, because somehow you need to interpolate for a number of points. And if two eigenvalues are the same, then that just counts as one point. Okay. But now you want to consider an approximate version of the problem, where you're given rho with operator Schmidt rank capital D. And you need to provide rho prime that is closest in one norm to rho, and such that the purification rank of rho prime is at most d to the k minus 1, where k is some parameter. Okay, so if someone gives you, I can't afford more than that purification rank, give me the best rho prime. And this is what we have formulated as a semi-definite program. So this SDP can provide you this rho prime, so somehow the rho prime that is closest rho and that satisfies this condition. And intuitively, how this is working is as follows. The assumption or the requirement that the purification rank of rho prime is at most d to the k minus 1 implies that you can only use a polynomial of degree 2 times k minus 1. So this can only cross the line at most 2 times k minus 1 points, because it's like saying that this polynomial minus lambda can only have 2 times k minus 1 zeros. So what the program is doing is to find a polynomial of degree 2 times k minus 1 that minimizes the distance in one norm to the n tilde points, and with the condition that the coefficients of the polynomial are the sums of the antidiagonals of a positive semi-definite matrix. Okay, this is what the semi-definite program is doing. So in the example before, again, assume you have this 5 points, and then say that k is equal to 3, so 2 times k minus 1 is equal to 4, so the polynomial can only cross the line 4 times, and say that meeting the condition of the coefficients, that's the best you can do. And okay, so you can then evaluate your polynomial at lambda 1, and you would obtain this result, and this is a certain distance away from, so p of lambda 1 is a certain distance away from lambda 1. And, you know, well, lambda 2 might be perfect, and then lambda 3 is another distance away from p of lambda 3 and so on. And you would have to add all these distances, and that would give you the distance in one norm from rho to rho prime. Okay, so from here, it's immediate to read that easy distributions are those where eigenvalues cluster around some points. So in the extreme case, all eigenvalues are equal. Then that's great, because polynomial of degree 0 does the job. But more generally, say if you have some exponential decay of correlations or something like that where the eigenvalues cluster around 0, for example, that will be somehow an easy distribution to approximate. And on the other extreme, the hardest distributions are those where eigenvalues are equally separated. Okay, so I have programmed this SDP, but I have some problems with the program, and unfortunately I can't show you any plots yet. What the program seems to be showing so far is that as you increase k, the distance between rho and rho prime decreases exponentially. But of course, we want to use this program to end up making a statement of the form. Given rho, we can provide rho prime such that their distance in one norm is at most epsilon, and the purification rank of rho prime is at most a function of epsilon. So with that, I'd like to conclude. So the ultimate goal of this project is to develop a good theoretical description of mixed states with tensor networks. And the more proximate goal is to find a canonical form for matrix product density operators. This was our original motivation. And the even more proximate goal is to relate the two decompositions of matrix product density operators, namely the operator Schmidt decomposition and the local purification form. In other words, we want to upper bound the purification rank by the operator Schmidt rank. We have shown first that it is not possible to upper bound the purification rank as a function of the operator Schmidt rank only. Second, we have shown that the purification rank can be upper bounded by the operator Schmidt rank times the number of eigenvalues and the operator Schmidt rank to the power of the number of different eigenvalues. And third, we have shown that finding the closest density matrix to your given one with a maximum purification rank can be formulated as a semi-definite program. As an outlook, well, we hope that these investigations, well, we think that this is the case indeed. Of course, they will have applications into these problems that we were interested in from the beginning. So in defining a canonical form for matrix product density operators, in defining thermal Hamiltonians, in studying symmetries of these mixed states, in improving in current numerical algorithms, and so on. But what we have discovered along the way is that these investigations may also have some collateral implications, in particular concerning the divisibility of completely positive maps via these connections that I mentioned at some point in the talk, or in the field of communication complexity via those connections I mentioned as well. And maybe also into some other problems that we're thinking about, but we still don't know. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention.
Any questions?
So the conclusion is that it's not looking very good from a practical perspective. If you want to, it looks like it's better to stick to the Schmidt.
I'm not sure it's not looking very good because the violation is very mild. So it's the counterexample provides a violation of this conjecture, which is very mild. So it's only constant versus logarithm.
But it means that you cannot be sure that you'll find.
Well, we have provided first, bounds in terms of the number of eigenvalues, which of course can be super large, can be exponential in the system size, the number of eigenvalues.
Right.
But there might still exist.
You haven't used any physical intuition, right? For instance, that these are the thermal states of a local Hamiltonian.
No, it's a purely mathematical problem. And yeah, this counterexample is found in this context of polytopes, which certainly has nothing to do with tensor networks. And I don't think they know this connection either. Well, I'm pretty sure they don't know, I guess.
Questions?
I mean, the fact that you can formulate this approximate problem as a semi-definite program is also, I think, very good news, because these programs are guaranteed to converge. And well, they converge very fast in principle, and I think the problem looks quite good in the end, despite the counterexample.
So putting the two things together, the counterexample on one end and this approximation that you're trying to find, So do you think that the violation of the original conjecture is eliminated, so you can restore essentially an approximate version of the original conjecture if you are ready to give up a bit of fidelity with the state? Like, so if you want just to approximate it still arbitrarily, maybe you can put a bound that is just a bound on.
That's I think that's what I just said, more or less, in the sense that just the fact that you can formulate this approximation problem as a semi-definite program, I think, is very good news, because it's something that, which is supposed to give you this closest density matrix very fast and so on. Of course, we want to try this semi-definite program on the counterexample and see how this works, see how long this takes and so on. But that's what I'm programming and haven't finished doing yet. So I can't really say how hard that will be on that particular counterexample.
I'm not sure it is the same. So with a semi-definite program, you can find, actually, let's say, the violation very efficiently, in a sense. Right? So you can, if I understand correctly, what you bypass your semi-definite program will let you know that how bad your violation needs to be for in the growth of the rank. Maybe you can just discuss it later. So what, finding the violation efficiently, in the sense how big the violation needs to be, is not necessarily the same as being able actually to reduce the value. To get a good approximation.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm misunderstanding.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think I understand. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this semi-definite program does this. So you're given a K, and it gives you the best rho prime, so the closest rho prime whose purification rank is upper bounded by that K. Now this K is a parameter that you know that if you let it grow until n tilde, then that will give you the exact solution. So somehow you have there a hierarchy of solutions which is guaranteed to converge. But still, you're asking how big might this distance be for a given k. Yeah, okay. All what I say is that the numerical experience seems to say that this decreases exponentially so far.
More questions? So I have a question. So if you look at the counter example and look at the slack matrices for the different t's, if you interpret this actually as a stochastic map, does it have some nice interpretation? Like, do you have an intuition what this map is doing?
No, and I don't think it has. Okay, maybe I can say something. The slack matrix of the regular T-gon is circulant. It's a circulant matrix. So it's a matrix because the polytope is regular. It's a matrix like that, so it has, say, imagine the first row, then the second row is the same as the first row, but just shifted. And the third row is again shifted with periodic boundary conditions, so to say. That's, okay, so this implies that it's diagonalized by the Fourier transform and the rank is only 3 and so on. But maybe this tells you that if you look at it as a stochastic map, there's some kind of cyclicity property on how it acts on the probability distributions, but I would have to think about it. Yeah, but that's a special property of the regular polytopes. If the polytope is not regular, then the slack matrix can be anything. But as I said, they are still a subclass of all non-negative matrices. But it's an interesting question, which I don't know. I don't know how to answer.
Let's thank the speaker again.